I don't think so. I'm good. Thank you. It's good to see you tonight. Happy that you're here. We have visitors with us. You know, it's always a special privilege and a joy to have visitors come and to visit with us, to fellowship with us, and to study a portion of God's Word. We're so happy that you're here. Happy everyone is here. It's a beautiful day out there. And, you know, this time of the year, we compete. We compete with nature and how beautiful it is. But you've chosen to be here tonight. You know, let me ask you something. Have you ever had an urge to maybe eat something that, you know, it's just like, it just came over you. It's just like, man, that sounds good. I'd really like to have that. And maybe it's just out of character for you to even eat that thing. I am not big on desserts at all. I'm not. But I planned on going to McDonald's, just getting a cup of coffee. Now that I am, you know, that's I'm Mr. Coffee. I drink coffee a lot, but I thought, boy, you know, a hot fudge sundae sounds great about right now. But I'm supposed to be dieting, Don, but maybe no one will know until I get to the church building. I'm just sitting out there in the truck and just enjoying that hot fudge sundae, Nancy, and I'm just loving it. And maybe a little too much. I get in here and I thought, all's good. You know, no one's going to know a thing. And I look down and there's a big glob of chocolate right here on my shirt. And David says he won't tell anybody. I'm like, you don't have to. You know, it's like right there. So, but anyway. Oh, well, you know, our sins find us out, don't they? We are looking at the eternal kingdom. Last week we looked at the state or the condition of the church on pages 66 and 67 in your books. I think that we all agreed that the state or the condition of the church at that particular time in the second century is very volatile. It is very volatile. You have persecution without. You have heresy within. So it's the church is really struggling at this time. Some of the individuals that come along and we've learned about thus far, the apologist, we looked at last week, not going to go over this, we looked at this individual last week, Marcion. There's different pronunciations of it. However you want to run with it, it's up to you. But when we were looking at this individual last week, if you were here, you had an opportunity to read it. Just give me some of the highlights surrounding him. You remember this individual? Just some of the highlights surrounding him. Yes, Dan.
Rich, intelligent, very generous.
Okay. Okay, rich, intelligent, everybody seemed to like him, okay?
He only liked part of the what we call the New Testament.
Okay, Luke and Paul, right? Those were credible individuals, characters in his eyes. Anything else that you can think of? What's that?
He created his own...
Yeah, man, that might let you in on a little clue that, you know, you're just walking to the tune of the wrong drummer. If you're writing your own Bible, you know, and you're creating your own church, okay? At some point in time, you just got to stop and say, wait a minute. Is it off the tracks? You know, we've started our own church. We are writing our own Bible, okay? At some point in time, you would think that just the bells and whistles would go off. But anyway, this is an example. Go ahead, Don.
One other heresy was that he believed that the God of the Old Testament was a tribal God, mm-hmm. and that the God of the New Testament was our Jehovah God.
Yeah.
And that the New Testament God was superior to the Old Testament God, but that they were different. That's probably his most identifiable heresy.
Yeah. You know, God over here is different than God over in the New Testament. And it just really trying to wrap your mind around that, okay? My mind harkens back to, you know, remember when Paul in Acts chapter 20 was meeting with the Ephesian elders? Now, wait a minute, it didn't say an elder. from Ephesus, did it? The elders, right? From Ephesus. Plural. Right? So he meets with the elders on that little island of Miletus. And when Paul was meeting with them, this verses 28 and 29, it says, therefore, he's telling the elders, take heed to yourselves. Take heed to yourselves and the flock. Now, why would he tell the elders to take heed to themselves?
Because of what comes next.
Okay, what comes next? Okay, you see, if they don't take heed unto themselves, they're not going to be any good to anybody else, right? You advise people that way all the time, don't you? You ever met somebody that just works themselves to the death, you know? They just absolutely work themselves to death for everybody else. And I just had this conversation with someone, I'm not going to mention any names, but recently. And I said, look, what good are you going to be whenever you're all spin up, you know, and you're out of gas? You know, tap others on the shoulder, delegate a little authority, and get others involved. If they don't want to be involved, you play the mom card or dad card and say, here's the time slot that you can do this, and you need to help out, okay? But just saying that, you know, you got to care for yourselves, okay? Spiritually, elders have to care for themselves, and they got to care for the flock. Then he goes on and he says this, the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. The church belongs to Christ, right? He bought it with his own blood. For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, and what? They will not spare the flock. Did Paul say, for there might be after my departure savage wolves who will come in and perhaps not spare the flock? Is that what he says?
No, perhaps.
That's not what he says. He's very emphatic. Lloyd, he's very clear about this. I know for a fact that there are savage wolves. Now, what does that mean? What savage wolves? What are we talking about? Someone's just coming in and they're just going to try to, you know, we're going to put a sign on our door. It says, there's no money in this office, you savage wolf. Now you leave. You know, so we got a little sign on our door. We don't want people coming in and stealing our stuff. Is that the savage wolf? What are we talking about? Huh? Cunning. What are they trying to do, Dan? What's the savage wolf? What's he trying to do? Oh, he's trying to destroy the church.
Get the sheep.
That's exactly right. He's trying to get the sheep, isn't he? Okay? He's trying to lead them astray. As Brian was reading for us tonight from the book of John, Jesus gives the analogy that he's the chief shepherd. My sheep will not hear the voice of a
stranger.
Thank you. Okay? And that's all he's saying to the elders here. It's like there's going to be other voices. They're going to come in, and as Jesus would say, they're going to be wolves in sheep's clothing. Okay? The Apostle Paul would share the exact same thing in the book of 2 Corinthians. Begin in chapter 10 and make your way through the end of 2 Corinthians. When Paul talks about false apostles who transform themselves into angels of light. Okay? Go ahead.
One of their problems also, we find that back then, under the heading of state of the church, there was a lot of moral demands. In other words, if an individual had a good idea about the change, they would run it down, not proving that it was scriptural, but it was just something that they felt was good.
Right. Right. And that, Lloyd, you know, that's a good point, is the fact when we're talking about how volatile the church is at risk, is that even whenever you've got an individual like Marshawn, who's saying that, you know, I'll take Paul and Luke, but you got others saying, I'm just going to take what I heard that brother say over there about what Paul said, you know? Because that carries more weight with me. Why do people do that? Why do you suppose people do that? Any idea?
They want to be right.
Ooh, it kind of fits my lifestyle, Don. That's what I want, to be right. Now, I know that doesn't go on today. Okay. But that no doubt, You know, that what he's saying kind of fits my lifestyle, and it agrees with my lifestyle. And that's what I'm going to go with. Okay, Don and then Dan.
One of the phrases we hear a lot today is, I can't believe that God. And then they fill in the blank with what they think. I can't believe that God would do such and such. I can't believe that God would teach that homosexuality is wrong.
Right.
Because we really love each other, and God's all about love, for example.
Right.
And so whenever I hear someone start a sentence with, I can't believe that God, I want to reply, I'm sorry that your belief system is wrong, because God is right.
That's right. Yep. That's the way it needs to be.
Yep.
Dan, you had your hand up. You wanted to say something.
Yeah, the preacher said it, so it must be right.
You know, and that excuse has been used a lot of times. You know, I know of evangelists that have studied with people. Maybe you've been in that position before, where you've had a Bible study with somebody, and you get to the very end, and they say, yeah, but I spoke to my preacher, my pastor, about this, and he says I don't need to be baptized, you know. Or, you know, he said that, you know, it's okay to worship with instrumental music, and you guys just don't know what you're talking about, you know. You know, and it's a struggle. I love what Don's point was, God's the authority. God's the authority, okay, and what he says goes, right? And that's why I made that comment just off the cuff Sunday night, is that we've got an authority problem in our culture today. We've got an authority problem in our culture where individuals are challenging. And it's okay, you know, if you got questions. If you got questions, let's answer the questions. If they're good, sincere, legitimate questions, okay? But at the same time, you know, we've got an authority problem in this world, our challenging authority today. I don't need to do that just because I don't want to, you know. And it's a concern. Let's move on to Gnosticism.
Let's see here.
Make sure I got this right, Jeff. All right, went the right way. All right, let's read in our books. Who wants to take two paragraphs in Gnosticism for me? And then we'll keep reading here and see how far we can get. I'll have someone else take another couple paragraphs. So Austin Tipton is going to take two paragraphs for me. Go ahead, Austin.
The word Gnostic comes from a Greek word meaning to know. For a time, Christians referred to themselves as true Gnostics, with the implication that through Christ they had learned the true wisdom. This term, however, is generally used to refer to those who reject the revelation of God and relied upon human wisdom. They were the religious rationalists who, through their own mental gymnastics, solved problems according to their own speculative philosophical bent. They became to the early church what Christian scientists are today. Salvation was to be obtained through intellectual means. Basically, Gnosticism is a dualism that pronounces the material world evil and the spiritual good. In order for man to get above the material and reach the spiritual, he must go through a hierarchy of intermediate beings, of which Christ is only one. The angels are also an important part, and accordingly, they are to be worshipped. Man is to buffet his body through asceticism, and by special knowledge rise above the sinful world of material things. God is spirit, and therefore could not have made the material world. This great God, however, breathed out emanations that resulted in the formation of a lesser God, who is the Jehovah of the Old Testament.
Interesting. Now, if you listen carefully to what our previous character, what he believed about the God in the Old Testament being different than the God in the New Testament, do you see how this is taking on a life form? You see this? Right? I mean, once Pandora's box, Lloyd, is open, you know, be ready for whatever's coming out. Okay? Who wants to take the next two paragraphs? Who's got that? The next two paragraphs.
I got it.
Okay, go ahead, Zach.
The Gnostics had most fertile imaginations and were very prolific in theories. There are many schools of Gnostics. They mix up a little Christianity, a little Judaism, and a little philosophy. Some from the mystery religions and other pagan religions, and a lot of wild dreams. The incarnation was just temporary union between the divine and human person. They held that they were essential antagonism between body and spirit. The spirit was imprisoned in the body. Their goal was to free the spirit, that it might ascend back to God. They divided men into three classes, animal or material, men predestined to destruction, non-Christian. psychic men who could attain salvation with the help of ordinary Christians, and the spiritual men who were destined to eternal life. They put great stress on the secret knowledge and traditions which they claimed were handed down by Jesus and the apostles. They wrote numerous books which they ascribed to be inspired apostles. Many people were led astray by the Gnostics. Their ideas exerted great influence in the church. Meeting the threat of Gnosticism, the Christians of that day had to distinguish very carefully between the genuinely inspired books and the forged works. They had to inquire certainly which books really came from the apostles and then associated with the apostles, and which books were later in origin and from uninspired men. Another weapon that was used in telling effect against the Gnostics was an appeal to the bishops of the church. If Jesus had handed down a secret doctrine, he would have given it to his apostles. The apostles would have given it to the elders or bishops. There were few churches who could trace the succession of their bishops back to the time of the apostles. Since the bishops of these churches knew nothing of the secret teachings of the Gnostics, their teachings were fixed.
Okay, and then he wants to take finish this out with the next two paragraphs. Who's got that? Next two paragraphs. Who wants to run with it? Go ahead, David.
Some of the Gnostics went to wild and fantastic extremes, like the Orphites, who claimed that the Old Testament was the perversion of the devil. God of the Old Testament was really the devil. He served in the garden as the true God, who was trying to liberate Adam and Eve, who had been imprisoned by the evil God. The serpent suggested eating the fruit would give the knowledge of Gnosis necessary to free them. The Orphites stressed the healing effects of the brazen serpent of Moses, who sanctified the elements used the Lord's Supper by having snakes crawl over the bread and then the wine. It shows how far men can wander from the truth.
Catch your breath.
Gnosticism reached its greatest height about 150 and resulted in a large number of divergent theories. Some of them believed the material body should be turned over to the fulfillment of all fleshly desires, and in this way destroyed its desires. Gnosticism had it in conclusions that were very contrary to truth. The idea of two or more gods made the God of the Bible inferior. Since he created matter, which is evil within itself, and since he favored the Jews, the Gnostics became anti-Semitic and began to deny the reality of Christ's fleshly nature and the resurrection of the body. This depreciation of the physical body led to celibacy and monasticism. In spite of these general differences, many Christians who were influenced by Gnosticism remained in the church until about 200 A.D., After this, they withdrew to form their own societies or associations.
Wow. That's something. So Gnostic means to know, and they relied on human wisdom rather than the revelation of God. Salvation was obtained by way of intellectual means. Now, let me just stop there for a moment. You know, you ever had somebody to taunt you with a secret? I got a secret. Oh, really? Well, what is it? I'm not going to tell you. And it just drives you bananas. Well, what is it? Come on, give me a hint. You know, the Gnostics kind of played this game. Spiritually, I have more gnosis, knowledge, than you. I know more than you do. And because I know more than you, I'm someone special in the church. I'm someone special in God's eyes. And maybe God, one of these days, will reveal it to you too. Do you see how it creates an environment of us versus them? Already, the church is divided with that type of thinking. Already, okay? So when you begin with this, and we begin to look at some of the stuff that was just read, can you really pin down what do they believe? Well, we read a bunch of stuff.
They're all over the place. Yeah.
They take a little bit of this, and they take a little bit of that, and they take a little bit of this over here, and they mix it all together, and it's like, hey, you know, this is us, you know? And it didn't need to be just from Christianity. It could have been from paganism. Okay? It could have been from just anything. Go ahead, Dan.
Wasn't that what was happening in Paul's day in Rome? I mean, with all the idolatry, you know, even the when he talked about on Mars Hill about the unknown God. Maybe we're just worse than anything.
Okay, and then one thing in particular was mentioned. Let's go through this, because we're addressing that. I'm glad you brought that up. So the material world was evil and the spiritual was good, which led to the worship of spirits like angels. Now, let's go over to Colossians chapter 2 and verses 1 through 4. Are you going to read it, or you got a question?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay. Wow, that's amazing how that works out. Just don't say anything about the chocolate on my shirt. We're good. So, Colossians chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, Austin, and verse 18. And then you can make your comment or your question or whatever you got, if you would. Thank you.
Colossians 2:18. Let no one disqualify you, insisting on asceticism and the worship of angels, going on in detail about visions, puffed up without reason by a sensuous mind.
Okay.
So, my comment there was, this is a classic example of cherry picking.
You think? Right.
You see, the unity of the New Testament is, you see examples in Colossians 2:18, tail end of Revelation in 19 and 22, in Matthew 4:10, and again at the end of the first chapter of Romans, mm-hmm. where it specifically says that you shouldn't worship angels.
Right.
And in fact, the only example that you have where it might be okay to worship angels would come in the Old Testament in Joshua, where Joshua falls down,
shows reverence.
The man of the Lord before the Battle of Jericho. And there's heavy implication that that might have actually
been the Lord.
That might have
right. been Jesus. Exactly. I think so.
probably not an angel.
Probably not. Yeah. So, you know, and cherry picking. Exactly. This next line here, they combine various religious teachings. Again, in John chapter 10, verses 1 through 5. Who's got that? John 10, verses 1 through 5. John 10. And guys, when you see these passages, does someone be ready to read them? Go ahead, Archie.
Yeah, 1-5.
Yeah, John 10, 1-5.
Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber, and he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will be by no means follow a stranger, or will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of a stranger.
That you know what that tells me? That also implies that I have to know the shepherd awful well, Patsy, to know his voice. That's what that tells me. You need to think about that for a moment. I need to know the Lord well enough to know his voice. Have you ever been in a conversation with somebody and they say something that's like, it's a head scratcher? That doesn't sound right. That just doesn't, you know, because that's not what my understanding of the scriptures was, not that, you know. So that's what that implies. We'll hear his voice. And we will listen to his voice. Well, where's this voice coming from? You better say the word of God. Okay. All right. Someone, Imogene.
In 69, is that where all of the bishops of the churches branched off?
Where at? Which line do you have in particular? Where are you talking about, Imogene? Okay.
Is that when they all branched off?
You know, I think we begin to see this for sure later on. Okay, and again, we had this discussion last week with which came first, the chicken or the egg kind of thing, and whether you take the view. I think that one of these authors that we're going to get into, it won't be this week, Lord willing, it will be next week. There is a strong case to be made for the fact that when they talk about the Acts of Peter, well, let me just throw that out. Research the Acts of Peter, a work known as the Acts, A-C-T-S, of Peter. Okay? An angel just got its wings. The Acts of Peter. So whenever you read that, that is something in these individuals' eyes at this particular time that they viewed as a credible resource That points back to the fact that Peter was a bishop in Rome. Now, when you're done reading that, you're going to probably walk away from this saying, man, there were a lot of people at Woodstock. You know, this is really crazy. So, but anyway, you know, no, it eventually happened. I have, as we go through this, in my mind, I'm beginning to see what's going on. I'll just give you the short of it. Heresy was beginning to run rampant in the church. False teaching, okay? As a knee-jerk reaction to safeguard the church, men came up with men's ideas on how to run the church, and they got away from what the Bible said. Okay? And instead of running the way God designed it, you know, and you got to keep in mind, Lloyd mentioned it earlier, they were exalting oral traditions above things that were written. Okay? So when you're competing against even things that, well, it must be so, Lloyd said it, and Lloyd heard it from Don, and Don said it at the feet of the Apostle Paul, so it must be true. But I'm reading right here what Paul says. Go ahead, Gary.
Well, what motive made them do that? I don't understand why.
What's that?
Somebody was motivated to do something like that. I don't understand. There's a lot of people that did that.
Right.
I don't understand why, unless it was something financially motivated.
Okay, like with this last character, Martian. I'm just going to call him Martian. Yeah. You know?
It's called power.
It is. I don't think that what he saw, in the church, and we would label him, we would brand him as being liberal, okay. But what he saw in the church was the pendulum swinging too far the other way. Is that there was such a conservative effort in the church that opinion was becoming law, doctrine, okay. So what he did was he ran the entire other direction. Not that anyone would do that today. So, you know, but that's what was going on. You know, so was it intentional? I don't think that it was intentional, but there is unintended consequences. You've heard of that, right? Unintended consequences. When you try to eliminate one problem and you create a greater problem, like trying to eliminate one problem. Someone else had their hand up.
Is this how many different names of churches are done today?
Well, as we make our way through church history, you see a lot of them were named after men. Okay? They're named after people. Okay? And you begin to see that. Okay? Or they came as a result of men. Okay? And their teachings. All right. So, you know, guys, as we're looking through this, so 1 Corinthians in chapter 1 and verse 10, here's what Paul says. In chapter 1 and verse 10, he says, "Now I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment." Okay? I always think it's funny. You know, whenever a poor soul, when I'm not making fun of anybody, but they'll sit down in my office, and usually it's someone who's looking for benevolence. Okay? They're wanting benevolence. They're needing money for something. And they sat down in my office, and their opening line is, "Tony, now, Pastor, I've been a member of the church for years." And then it's a dead giveaway. It's like, no, you haven't. And why is that? Because we all speak the
same
thing, right? We all speak the same thing, right? So, and that's, you know, that's what we're talking about here, is the fact that, you know, they combined various religious teachings, the Gnostics did. Man, how confusing would that be, right? They divided men into three classes: material or animal, mental, psychic, or spiritual. The Old Testament was perverted, and God was really, that is really way out there, isn't it? That God was really the devil, and the devil and the serpent was the true God.
trying to rescue people from being trapped in the Garden of Eden.
Amazing. You know, I mean, someone's got too much free time on their hands here, you know, to sit here and dream this stuff up. But that's, you see, when you start this stuff, folks, you get on this slippery slope. And that's the one thing, we mentioned this last week, I'm not going to get off on this tangent, but is the fact that whenever you start to step out into the deep end like that, you're just at the risk of the current. You know, you're at the mercy of the current. It just takes you after a while, okay? Unless, you know, I saw this guy on the news the other day. Let's get out of that frame of mind and into another frame of mind. He is former Antifa, okay? You know what Antifa is, okay? He's former Antifa. And it's like, what happened? Why? How did you get out of it? How did you break that? You know, and he says, well, I began to compare what was being taught and what was being said, you know, with what was actually happening. And he said, I basically educated myself and I had an awakening. And it's like, okay, I gotta get out of this. That's how you get out of the current. Okay, you get educated. Okay, someone educates you and you get out of it. That's how people get out of cults. Okay, they're educated, they're enlightened. And they step out, okay? So when you see something like this, it's just amazing. But one of the saddest things I think we read in this article that we read, it comes at the very end. In spite of these general differences, many Christians who were influenced by Gnosticism remained in the church until about 200 AD. After this, they withdrew to form their own, what does it say? Societies or associations. What's wrong with going back to the way things are supposed to be? You understand what I'm saying? That's what disturbed me when I read all that. It's like, look, haven't you learned your lesson? Haven't you learned your lesson? I still ask myself that with churches today that stepped out in the deep end and let the current take them. With the change agents and the voices that are clamoring, change, we got to change. Change it. What are we changing it? They can't answer that question. What we're changing into, they have no clue. Okay? It's just always evolving. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get out there so far, and then sometimes, with some folks, you have an awakening. It's like, wow. Oh, you know?
What am I doing out here?
What am I doing out here? Exactly, Don. What in the world? You know, I'm upstream without a paddle. You know? But you know what doesn't make any sense to me? Is the fact that after they're rescued and they find, I got this, I figured it out. Is that not long after that, you'll see them downstream again. You know, maybe with half a paddle. And it's like, what you doing? What you doing? Okay. Any questions or comments? We're all tracking this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm Gene, I'm giving you one more question, man. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, this lady that I know decided that where she goes to church, they would hire a rock man the next morning, draw in.
Yeah, sure. The entertainment aspect of it. Right. Right. Yep. And it's that's going on today. Yeah, the church of what's happening now is one of the Gary, did you have your hand up?
Well, it's something else. Music in church.
Yeah, okay. All right. And you know what, guys, we'll get to all that as we're studying church history. Okay? Whenever you see the Catholic Church divided, don't lose sight of that question. Because the Greek Orthodox Church contended, we will not use instrumental music. What was the New Testament written in?
Greek.
It was written in Greek. There's something to that. Okay, but we'll get to that. All right, so where are we at here? We got 10 minutes. We're doing great. Let's move on to our next character. All right. Docetism. Okay. Let's read this. Who wants to read? Oh, someone can read this whole thing right here. Who wants to read this? Go ahead, Austin.
Docetism is the belief that Christ did not really suffer on the cross, but rather he just seemed to suffer.
He seemed to suffer.
The word deceit comes from a Greek word which means to see. The theory is based on a conception that matter is essentially evil. Therefore, Christ was not corrupted with anything of the material world. Neither the incarnation nor the crucifixion was actual facts, but only the semblance of reality. Ignatius describes Docetic teaching and insists that the sufferings of Christ were real. It was this threat to true Christianity that led Ignatius to feel the church could not or could be protected from such error by exalting the chairman of the elders to a permanent position of authority.
There's that knee-jerk reaction to we got to do something. You see it? So when we're talking about Docetism, you know, it means to seem. And it's like, you know, after you sit, can you imagine that meeting? I mean, let's all sit down here and let's discuss this. So what do we believe? Well, everything's just a figment of our imagination. Let's base our faith on that. You know, I mean, nothing's real. Okay? Nothing is real. Christ seemed to suffer, but not really. Okay? Jesus' incarnation, his crucifixion, they didn't really happen. Okay? The fake news, that didn't really happen. Right? That's just not real. Okay? And Ignatius, his response was, let's create a watchdog. You know, let's create a watchdog, a chairman who will watch out for this. Go ahead, Austin.
Well, I was just going to point out that this has a ton of problems. The biggest one being you've got a physician, Luke, that writes his account of Jesus' prayer on the Mount of Olives where he's actually bleeding from his eyes in agony.
Mm-hmm.
Because he suffered.
Yes, yes. What's the point of the prayer and the agony? You know, if it's not real.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's, you know, guys, you know, I'm just joking. You know, it's not. When it really happened, there's no monster, okay? There's no bad guys. Go ahead, Don.
I think it's important to point out that this is pretty much the same thing that's taught today by Christian Science.
Yes.
Christian scientists believe that this is not real. This is, it's just our perception of a spiritual thing, a concept of a table,
mm-hmm.
that it's not real. And so when they go through their process of patterning with people, uh-huh. it's to break them loose from the physical, which is evil, uh-huh. and get them into the spiritual. And that's the same thing that the Docetists taught.
That's right. And you see, we saw some of this in Gnosticism as well, right? Do you see how, again, they're all kind of mimicking one another with weird things? Okay, but why would you go here? You know, why would your mind go to this place and say, boy, it's just, it's not real. And I know, you know, we look at what they're saying, you know, matter is evil. Okay, God's bigger than the boogeyman, as the kids sing. Okay, so Jesus can't surely suffer and die. Okay, and what it does is it takes the humanity right out of Jesus and his compassion, doesn't it? And his love.
He was just pretending.
Exactly. Oh, he's just pretending. Then, you know, man, what kind of religion is this? And that's all I'm saying. It's just bizarre. Go ahead.
So we've established that the major portion of the Bible at this point has been used in the churches. These letters are being mm-hmm. passed around. So the arguments that we can make today to see that these things that are happening are clearly wrong should be fairly obvious to anybody that's been a member of that church, you would think. Is that the case? Are they limited in the ability to read these?
Okay. What we're going to do is no. That's a good question. I love it. Irenaeus. We're going to get to him, Lord willing, next week. Okay. So that, I think he get a chance to read that part, is that what he tries to do is in his attempt to counteract heresy, he actually goes and he tries to find churches where apostles were and letters that they had written, okay? And then he's beginning to listen to churches that are preaching and teaching things where there were no apostles there. What are you guys saying? Then we're getting into this, he's trying to filter out the human aspect of it versus what is divine, is what he's actually trying to do. Okay? So when we talk about the state of the church, can you imagine being in such a condition? I mean, you're trying to, and we're, I'm not saying, Ignatius, man, that was smart what you did. Or, that's horrible, that's awful, that, because we understand that he didn't have a right to appoint a spiritual person in that place. But we can understand, my goodness, the church is just in a tailspin. It's out of control, you know? You ever hydroplane before? Archie, have you ever hydroplane before, Archie? Reva has him. I hit a hot button there. So, but you know, you have no control, okay? You're just spinning. That's okay, Archie, I have to. In Georgia, through six lanes of traffic, God was watching over me. So, yes.
Well, in answer to his question, the problem they were running into by this time is that there were a bunch of spurious, there were a bunch of faults letters out there, and that's why the attempt to set the canon up was so important. There were the Acts of the Apostles from 180, the Acts of Andrew and Bartholomew, Acts of the of Barnabas, Acts of John, the lost chapter of the Acts of the Apostles, the Acts of Marmari, Acts of the Martyrs, Acts of Paul, Acts of Peter and Paul, Acts of Peter and the Twelve, Acts of Philip, Acts of Pilate, Acts of Thomas, Acts of Timothy. So,
what's your flavor? Name your poison.
Until they went through the process of trying to pin down which of these letters were real and were written by the folks that they claimed to be written by in the proper time frame and put the canon together, I think Austin's point is pretty solid,
which is solid.
That they were having a lot of trouble.
It's confusing.
Imagine if everybody in this room had their own acts of somebody, Barnabas or whatever, and we're trying to settle on what the right thing to teach is.
I don't agree with what Martian did. Martian, okay? I don't agree with what he did. But you see, this is why he's saying, okay, I'll just go with Luke what Peter says, or Paul. Okay, at least I've got someone inspired. You see what I'm saying? Because it's crazy. It's just a crazy time. Okay? And it's really hard. And by the time, again, though, we get to Irenaeus, and we're beginning to look at what he's doing, he is saying, enough of this business. And he literally went back to the churches where the apostles were, and they preached, and they wrote letters. And these people, guys, you need to appreciate the fact when you're reading the letters to, like, the Ephesians, Philippians, you know, don't think that they didn't read these to the congregation. Those are great sermons, okay? You know, so I like preaching from those letters, you know? So anyway, it sure beats, you know, I got my tires, got an oil change today, and I couldn't handle it at Grismer. Dr. Phil, he's going to save the world. And today he's just trying to talk cousins out of marrying one another today. And I said, I looked at everybody in that lobby. I said, I cannot handle this. And I got up and I walked out. So, but anyway, and some other lady walked in and she asked the guy behind the counter, you know, she goes, do you have a newspaper for me to read? I said, here, you're going to read this because Dr. Phil's trying to untangle that mess and there were cousins are marrying one another. She just loved it. But anyway, so guys, I think that's all we've got time for tonight. Good comments, you know, good thoughts. All right. Have a great night.
Hey, Scott, if you look up Acts of the Apostles in Wikipedia, they'll compare all of those with the real Acts of the Apostles.
Okay.
We go by all.